Up out up.
My boobies. My boobies. My boobies are out.
Oh boy.
Have a sex toy, we'll try it. Have a fetish, we'll try it. We masturbate and copulate to recreate and educate. We are the Trisexuals.
Welcome to the Trisexuals Podcast. I'm Max Chameleon.
And I'm Lily Chameleon.
We have been so unbelievably busy lately, Sexplorers, and we've definitely been feeling a lot of love from you guys, and I want to talk about it, but real quick, we should get through Lit's playing. So Lily, what have you been playing with lately?
So Max, I've been playing with the Fun Factory Velita. I really hope I'm saying that right, but you know me,
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's Velita.
Because
it's based off of their larger toy that's similar called Volta. So what's special about these toys, honey?
So what's really special about the Velita is it's really, you know, travel size. It's really kind of tiny, but it has almost like, think of a serpent tongue that you have two little pieces that come to a point, and it's a vibrator. So you turn the bottom and they basically slap together. So think of...
Oh yeah, we mentioned this briefly on our last episode with swinging. It just kind of like has the flappy gummies.
Yep, so I've been really playing with that. I've been enjoying it. It's been interesting, I have to say that.
Awesome. And then, of course, the Volta is the bigger version of the Velita, which is something that you can check out. So I've been playing with not too many sex toys lately, but I do have something interesting to share. I'm trying to give up masturbating with my right hand.
I was about to say, it's okay, don't worry, he's not giving up masturbating.
No, that will never happen. But I've just, you know, I've gotten to the point where I can't even, like, come anymore when I use my left hand, and I'm so used to using my right hand, and I have something that's known as, like, the death grip, which is, like, you just...
What is the death grip?
The death grip is when you get so used to masturbating, and you just, like, pound the shit out of it. Like, you grip way too tight, you're stressing out your arm, and you're just, like, going way too fast. It's not good. It, like, desensitizes the penis. It's bad all around. And plus, I've been starting to get, like, RSI, which is repetitive stress injuries in my arm for doing
so
this.
So, instead of having a tennis elbow, you have a baster elbow?
Oh, baster elbow sounds weird. I would say a jerker elbow.
A jerker elbow. That is... Oh, my God.
I mean, that could also be because I type for a living, but certainly this isn't helping. So I've been trying to switch over to my left hand, which has been really, really hard. You know, a lot of people, I think, switch to their less dominant hand for a new experience. But for me, it's like hardly enjoyable at all because my right hand knows how to please me perfectly. My left hand hasn't learned how to do it yet, and I'm just not used to it. What we really want to talk about today is an event that just happened here at Denver. Well, this is just for the first part. We've got something really cool coming a little bit later on. We're actually going to be talking with an actual pro dom named Damina L. She runs the Mile High Dungeon here in Denver. That's where we went before, and she's the dom that put us in the big bubble. And she has all sorts of cool things that she talks to us about, so you definitely want to stay tuned for that. But real quick, I just really wanted to thank everyone that ended up coming to the Denver FurryCon Denver. We had our first ever in-person Trisexuals meet and greet.
Whoop, whoop.
I was blown away because I told Lily before the event, I'm like, I'd be happy if there's like three other people than us. If it's like Lily and I, three other people, then I would consider it a success. We had, I think, around 30 people show up.
Yeah, between 25 to 30. It was pretty incredible. We had people stopping by as we're talking to find out what the heck we're all about.
Yeah, so new people found out about the podcast, a bunch of people that have listened to the podcast. Now, of course, it did help that we were giving away a free sex toy.
And a few shirts, but yeah, anyway.
Well, I do want to talk about those a little bit because we have turned the Trisexuals logo and put it into a t-shirt, which is this cool gray shirt. Now, I only made a run of 10 of these, and half of them went to, you know, people that we work with that have helped us out and that sort of thing, and four of them actually were given away.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a run of other shirts, so if you're interested, you know, find a way, let us know, because I want to have an idea of how many shirts I should have made, and then, you know, maybe make it available to purchase, or maybe as a Patreon award or something like that. So that was awesome, and we had Xenocat Creations create our giveaway toy. It It was the Jora sex toy, which is really cool. And they did it in Trisexuals colors. It was one of the most beautiful pours I ever saw. We'll link to it in the show notes. And one of our lucky sexplorers ended up winning that at Denver. Four others wore won shirts. And that was just absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, everyone, for showing up. And I think we're going to definitely do a meet and greet at... Mm-hmm. Midwest First Fur Fest this year as well. So stay tuned for that. We're definitely going to get some more giveaway stuff and try to make it lots of fun.
So as you know, we're talking about Denver, there's a couple other things that happen in Denver that we'll have to add into a different podcast.
I think that might be next podcast.
Yeah, because we had some really interesting fun times and you're not going to want to miss that next podcast.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing that happened, and we'll get into that next episode. But we just don't have time this episode because there's such a great interview coming up.
As you can tell, Sexplorers, we have been so busy this summer. Oh, my goodness. We're
very excited. So one other thing before we get to the interview that I want to mention, I really have to give some props and praise to some of the models out there, the Mersuit models, who have been supporting us. They've been doing pinups / shoutouts, which means that they will pose, you know, their sexy selves, and they'll have a little, like, piece of paper or something like that that says, hey, listen to the Trisexuals podcast. Or
you guys have been absolutely amazing. I've enjoyed, you know, even meeting you, a couple of you guys at, you know, Denver. I was so excited to meet some of you, and
it's been really awesome way to get the word out to people that are like-minded on sexual stuff. Plus, as the Trisexuals, we love to support models. We're entirely sex positive. We support models of all shapes, sizes, denominations, not even just mersuiters. But I definitely have to thank you all, and right now I'm going to give you all a shout out. So, firstly, well, we all know that Shiara had done a pinup for us. She actually did another one with a butt plug towel, which I was particularly fond of. And she's also kind of responsible for kind of starting off this trend. So big special shout out and thank you to Shiara. We love you.
Love you.
Let's see. Then I believe next was Mackay. He did a cool thing with a guitar. We're, of course, going to link these in the show notes, so definitely check them out because they're all very sexy, very cool.
And the next one is Aurora Kitten. Absolutely cute and sexy.
Don't forget Droxy Hyena.
Oh, I totally forgot about Droxy. And then, of course, we have Micah the Curl.
I think it's Mika. Wait, Mika? Is it Micah or Mika?
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. So, Micah, I apologize. Please let us know how to pronounce your name correctly. We are horrible at that.
Yeah, we're definitely bad at pronouncing things, but, you know, apologies. Anyway, thank you guys so much. It's awesome. You've brought a whole bunch of, like, new, excited people here, and we definitely want to keep in touch and help out the modeling community any way we can. So, you know, don't hesitate to reach out if there's anything that we can do for you. Seriously, we love you.
So if you're a model and you really like this podcast and you want to get the word out,
even if you sort of like the podcast.
Okay, even if you sort of kind of maybe like the podcast, you know.
Reach out to us.
We just want to talk to you, get to know you, and see where we can...
Yeah, maybe you could do a shout out for us, and maybe we do a shout out for you and share the love. Before we go to the interview, there's one last exciting thing to announce. We have a giveaway going on right now.
So I actually was able to do the review on this toy. Oh,
that's right. Duh, there's a review to go along with it. This is the first time that Lily's done a video review, so you get to see her cute pup self actually presenting the review. So you should check that out on YouTube. Links, of course, in the show notes. And what she reviewed is the Stronic G. That's a pulsating sex toy from Fun Factory. Those are the awesome ones that push in and out, and they use like magnets to do it. It's really cool.
Yep, I have a pulsating purple toy.
Oh, I love it when you alliterate. Anyway, so check that out. Sign up for the giveaway. It goes until September 21st.
Yes.
And it's like a $200 sex toy, so you probably want to sign up.
Exactly.
So now, Lily, I think it's time that we go to our interview with Damina L after a word from our sponsor. Hey, Sexplorers. I'm really excited to talk to you today about a truly exceptional sex toy shop, Vibrant. Located at bevibrant.com, Vibrant has a commitment to inclusivity with a sex-positive and education-forward approach. As the Trisexuals, we love to recommend Vibrant. We can be sure that each and every toy that they carry is of high quality and is 100% body safe. You simply can't go wrong. Vibrant is also backed by Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. How cool is that? As fans of the show, you'll receive 20% off your order at BeVibrant.com when using the code TRISEXUALS at checkout. That's TRYSEXUALS. That's BeVibrant.com and use the code TRISEXUALS at checkout to get 20% off your body safe toys. Thank you to Vibrant for supporting the Trisexuals and making the sex positive world a better place.
So hello, Sexplorers! We are here at the Mile High Dungeon in Denver with Damina L. Hi, Damina.
Hello.
So, we always start with a question. What is your favorite dessert?
Well, I really, really love huckleberry pie.
What is huckleberry pie?
I can't say I've had huckleberry pie.
Huckleberry pie. Huckleberries grow, they're different than blueberries, but they're very much like blueberries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, living in Georgia, places where these tend to grow wild. And they only grow maybe a week or two in June. So there's a very short window that you can have huckleberries. But they're just so good. It's very much like a blueberry pie, but not quite.
So are they kind of tart or?
Both sweet and tart. Ooh. It depends on how much you... sweetener you put good. In them, but
could you even find could you go to like a grocery store here and find huckleberries? Is that a thing you can find, or they're just like...
I think more a farmer's market. It's
farmer's market
during
okay.
the right season, but you know they would call me the huckleberry hound
if you sniff them out.
But I love chocolate too, so I mean, you know, there's lots of desserts. It's chocolate hard, but that would be my favorite. So
ooh, that actually sounds really good now. So Damina, tell us. What is the Mile High Dungeon?
Well, this is a sacred space, absolutely. I consider it an art studio. It is where performance art, living art, erotic creativity takes place on a regular basis. Myself and my partner, Mistress Victoria Marks, we decided to become partners just about 2.5 years ago. We both had been working separately in our separate dungeons, each of us, you know, 2 decades or so, her a little bit longer. And my studio got raided because of marijuana. The owner of the building where I was renting.
Was that here in Denver?
Yes. They were looking for marijuana because the owner had several illegal grows that were set up in other units that were, you know, adjacent to mine. It was the best thing that could happen because it pushed me out of that location, and I really needed to do that. It had some character and everything, but, you know, you get... When you're a dom, you know, you want to have I wanted to have a profile. My studio needed to be in a non-residential location. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, of course, the landlord to know, to be aware of what it was and, you know, to feel safe and secure there so that later if, and I've known this to happen where they didn't tell the truth. And then when the landlord found out, they were kicked out. And that's just another burden you don't want to have. And it's just dishonest. But,
so it's better to have those uncomfortable conversations in the beginning.
Yes, absolutely. Get it out of the way. And, you know, but also, you know, just to have the security and know. But you want it to be for me, industrial location where you're not going to have a lot of people watching. You know, you want your clients to also feel comfortable and safe, that there's not a million eyes staring at them walking into the location. And so anyway, myself and this other awesome dom who's extremely professional, I feel like I won the partner lottery with her because it's very hard to find partners in this industry. For one, because, you know, women who are doms tend to be very intense and have, you know, they have a way they want to do things and, you know, and, to be able to work together, but also to have the trust that they are operating, you know, with a high standard of cleanliness and contamination prevention and safety and professionally and knowledgeably and, you know, and all of these different important factors, you know, so she had all of that and more. And, you know, we definitely as human beings, I mean, all relationships that are worthwhile require investment, require effort. Nothing is effortless.
Yes.
But, you know, we've done awesome.
We are very honored that you have invited us into this safe space.
Oh, and
this is actually our second time here. For anyone that's listened to the episode where we get put into our own little bubble universe, as it was called.
That with other people. That was awesome.
That was fun.
That was a really, really awesome one.
It.
So one question that I have is, and I actually don't know much about the pro-dom world. And you would consider yourself a pro-dom, right?
Absolutely, yes. A professional dominatrix.
So, you know, I come from the side of, like, going to parties and things like Thunder in the Mountains, and I find play partners. What sets a pro-dom apart from, like, a regular dom I might meet at something like that?
Well, for one, a professional dom and you know, well, I'll talk about myself. I can speak for me.
That's why we're interviewing.
Yeah. You know, I feel it's important to have a wide range of equipment and all sorts of different types of equipment, which allows people, like, before you invest in something, if you can go visit a dom that has certain types of equipment, very expensive oftentimes,
yes.
As is most of this stuff.
And keeping it maintained and safe and clean and all that good stuff.
Yes. But you can experience things before you invest in it. And, you know, hopefully that dominatrix has experience with all of these, you know, tools. And when you have played with literally thousands of people, you have that back information to glean
Absolutely.
From, even though each person is so unique. And I don't, you know, see, like a new person comes to me for a session, I don't see it as a cookie cutout situation. This person is totally unique and individual, and I have to approach it that way and even put myself in check that I may not completely understand it, where this person is trying to go, what they need to get out of it. So there's a lot, you know, to the investigation and negotiation process to really hook into that information.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about, though, because that night that we had come here, one of the things that we were considering doing was getting in the vacuum tower, I think it was called. And I remember, like, talking to you about some of the things that were my concerns and that sort of thing. But you've had so much experience putting different folks in there that you were able to be like, well, you know, this has helped some people and this has helped other people. And, like, that sort of experience is something that I think is very valuable to have, as opposed to someone I might just meet who, you know, like, well, let's try this fact tower thing out. And, you know, it's not like they're bad at it or anything like that, but they just haven't experienced all the different possibilities of people you can have.
Just because a dominatrix who's professional has had, you know, worked for many, many years, you know, that in and of itself doesn't guarantee that that person was actually paying attention or trying, you know, it's motives, you know, factor into everything. So, you know, I mean, I think that a person who is looking to go visit with a dom should definitely do their homework. You know, where is this person's head at? You know, what kind of stuff are they saying? You know, many of us have very public personalities now and, you know, social media or blogs or, you know, different information. And, you know, where's their head at? What's their motive for doing what they're doing? And, you know, for me, I mean, this is very exciting for me, which is one of the reasons I've done it as long as I have. I've worked in holistic medicine as my background prior to being a dom. I had studied under a Rolfing master, and I did all different types of body work. And this I consider to be another form of body work. Only you're adding in the erotic aspect of the human being, as well as the psychological part and the emotion part and even the spiritual part. And I see this as very spiritual terrain. Not religious, but, you know.
No, it's spiritual, especially like any of our listeners that have gone through a, you know, a scene and you've gone through a cathartic scene and you just are crying at the end. It's just such a spiritual relief at the end of that.
Absolutely. And I mean, the way I see it, you know, we are each day of our lives. I mean, I feel personally obligated as a human being to be the best human being I can be, which means I have to really know and understand myself and understand how I think and why I think the way I do and who I am as a human being. And that involves, the sexual part is a very core part of each of us. Whether we're active or not, I mean, we still, you know, we're developing from when we're very young and to, you know, we never stop developing. And our sexuality is a part of that development and maturity and growth. And, this process of BDSM activities, I mean, even if you take out the leather and take out the spanking and take out certain, you know, bells and whistles, it's humans acting out. Yeah. And then learning from their acting out. And mm-hmm. sometimes it does very much involve processing shame, processing trauma, processing all sorts of things. And, you know, in effect, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm a psychodramatist who also is a facilitator of scenarios that allow people personal growth. And really, they're the ones doing the work. I'm sure. I'm guiding, I'm, you
you're
know,
a facilitator.
Facilitating.
Yeah. You're making sure it's done in a safe and secure environment.
Yeah, they're the ones, you know, people have tried to hold me accountable for their for their expanding their kinky, like, see, it's all your fault, you know, like, I have a couple that I've worked with for almost a decade, and I'll just never forget when I first met them that, you know, I do this thing with everybody where I ask them, you know, to give me a list of their limits, their green lights, and then their maybes. I like maybes a lot because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there.
Right?
Yes. And, you know, the green light stuff can turn red any moment. Mm-hmm. The red stuff, as people navigate the terrain, oftentimes turns green.
Oh, yes.
You know, we've experienced that quite a bit.
Yes, we have.
Absolutely. So, you know, but to see how people grow and learn and expand, I mean, that's just been wild and fun and interesting and quite an honor that I just feel, you know, so grateful to have been a part of.
Since you've said you've been doing this for many, many years, and have you seen an increase in the amount of people wanting to be, you know, into this environment over the years?
What I've seen a change in more so is the age of people. There was a time, I would say around 2012. Prior to 2012, most people were more mature, older people. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, a lot of people in their 60s. And, but, you know, I would say late 30s, older. And I would, you know, get calls from people who were 25 or 18 once in a while. It would be rare, though.
Sure. Right.
Nowadays, it is quite common to get a call from someone in their late teens, early, you know, like 21, 22. And it's been an interesting transition for me because I'm very protective of younger people. And mm-hmm. I'm like, but wait, I don't want to traumatize you when you're 19. Go. And I don't want to be an ageist, though.
More mature, you know, like, okay, they've been through a lot of experiences in their life. So, like, you know, you probably feel a little bit more comfortable pushing the envelope in a way that you might not with somebody that's
right.
Like, oh, God, what have you experienced? I don't even know, you know?
Yeah. Like, even the Rolfing Institute, back when I was a body worker of that type, which I'm a body worker now, just a different type, you know, they made you wait till you were 25 to go to their school because they wanted you to have some life experience, you know? And so I guess maybe I was brainwashed by that a little bit because I think, yeah, it's good. But at the same time, I think, wow, they could go elsewhere where it's questionable, you know, what kind of experiences they're going to have and if that person is going to be safe or, you know,
it's better this than an alternative.
Right. It makes me think, well, dang, at least I know if they, you know, I'm going to make sure that they're going to be safe and everything, all the bases are covered and just got to see that ID.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
It's always very important with all the stuff we talk
really
about
is.
And do.
I think there is a sexual revolution going on. I mean,
As
an erotic service provider rights activist, I see a lot of experience, a lot of resistance that's going on to, you know, LGBTQ, to sex workers, to, you know, but then on the other hand, you know, if you're tuned in to these communities where all this stuff going on, you know, in the real world, you know, there's just amazing stuff going on. And, you know, I think it's awesome. It's awesome. And, you know, it's important. You know, a lot of the people earlier on in my Dom career, you know, I've done a lot of my own research, communicating, asking a lot of questions, you know, people, what, you know, when did you first start experiencing this? Why? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I used to hear a lot different feedback from people. And, you know, more and more now, like, for instance, it used to be rare to find a woman who was into strap-on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the younger women these days are throwing them on. Yeah. And, you know, yep. And not because they're necessarily in a kink community.
Yeah.
But because it's more commonplace, just as a general thing that people are open to.
Absolutely.
And I'm really happy about that. And it's not going to stop. It's unstoppable.
I completely agree.
I don't want it to stop. It's great. And especially you mentioned with the whole pegging thing and putting on a strap on, like the change in you know, my lifetime from like, oh, if you're a male-bodied individual that likes to put toys in your back end, you're gay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was told that, and I had to fight against it when I first started playing with it. And I went through a whole thing when I started playing back there. I was like, well, I guess I'm gay, but I'm not really attracted to males. So I was very confused, like, but this is what I was told that I had to be. But nowadays, it's like, oh, you know.
You touch on something that if I had a dollar for every time a man said to me, well, I'm not gay, because
they felt like they had to yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
if they wanted to play anally. And, you know, it's really too bad, because no, your body is your body. It was designed to experience all sorts of pleasurable things.
Well, you got the prostate back there. To leave that unplayed with is just a shame.
Yeah, especially when you can get orgasms out of it with that. Not all, but many women can have vaginal orgasms. You have guys that can have anal orgasms. Yep. I mean, wow. It's awesome.
It's a whole new world.
It really is. And you brought something up that, as a female-bodied individual growing up, I was pushed into, okay, you gotta have find a guy, you're gonna have sex, you're gonna have babies, and be in this, you know, stereotypical relationship.
Wait, your parents told you need to have sex and have babies? They didn't just skip from, like, you need to find a guy and have babies? Usually they don't talk about okay, that middle part is just, like, left out of the conversation.
Okay, yeah, they did not really talk about the sex, because that was, like, totally not talked about in my family. They were very conservative. They still are. And it just made me think, like, I had those feelings of, I'm attracted to both men and women. I'm pansexual. I didn't realize that till a few years ago. And even though when I look back on it, I'm like, you know, I had these thoughts when I was younger, but because of society and the pressures.
Well, you question yourself. You're like, well, that can't be right.
That can't be right. It's wrong.
I'm supposed to.
You know, I'm not right. This is wrong. This is not the right way of thinking. In actuality, it's who I am. Mm-hmm.
I remember when my mom, when I was 11 and 12, I would draw women, and I would start with their breasts and then draw the woman around the breasts. But, oh, I loved, you know, I just knew that I was attracted to women, well, you know, male and female. Or actually, like, I'm a definitely pansexual person now. Now I understand.
I'm like, everybody.
But you remind me of when I was, I think, 7. I found my uncle's Playboy magazines, and I was looking through them, and I was just, you know, amazed. I mean, just glued to those pictures. And my grandmother caught me and took them away from me.
No.
And I was really angry about it. And I wanted to see them so bad that I devised a reasoning, and they fell for it.
Oh, no.
I said to them, Nanny, I need to put clothes on those girls. Those girls need clothes.
Oh my goodness!
Paint clothes on them, and so they let me sit at the dining room table in front of everyone with Playboy magazines, painting very slowly.
That's super creepy. Really creepy. They're sitting there like, "Oh, we've done good. Look at her. Yes. She's covering
them
up.
She's doing well. Those dirty magazines covering them up and." Oh yeah, but yeah, you know, you have those feelings, you know, we develop much younger than what most people want to acknowledge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think when we stop suppressing this stuff as dirty and bad and wrong, you know, then we will be able to, humans in general will approach sexuality in a much more rational, reasonable way.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of the negatives that erupt out of human, you know, all that shaming, you know, that's the source of a lot of this dark stuff that is bad,
absolutely,
that really is bad, is keeping everything shut down and in the closet and not being rational and reasonable about sex. I mean, it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's good stuff.
Absolutely.
It really is. And you're right about the change is happening. It's coming. We can see it every day. I don't think there's a way we're going to be putting it back in the closet.
No.
There's no way to.
No.
There's no way to do that. It's good. It's a ratchet. It moves in one direction. It can't slip back.
I like that analogy.
And I do think that there is a connection between, you know, sex workers. I prefer erotic service providers because not all erotic service providers provide sex.
Right.
You have all sorts of different erotic services. But this fight that is going on, and it's been going on for a long time now, but especially has really, you know, become more public in the last, I would say, 5 years or so. And then even more so this last year because of these other laws that they passed that have harmed erotic service providers greatly. But I think that, you know, the way our society, there's an interwoven connection there between the sexual freedoms that we have in this culture, how sex workers are treated in this culture. You know, when finally erotic service providers are decriminalized, then, you know, we're going to see a lot more in regards to healthier attitudes altogether.
Yeah.
And then those erotic service providers are finally going to be able to bring in our knowledge and awareness that
and
has, you know, all this, the stuff that's been hidden.
Right.
You know, sex workers, erotic service providers, we've known all this time what people really wanted and what they were really thinking and feeling and doing that everybody was just lying about being honest about and kept in the closet. And, but that's all, you know, going to be a different, thing, you know, eventually, but also in regard to consent. Consent is something that, you know, we have a lot to teach the public about in regard to, you know,
absolutely,
all sorts of things, boundaries, all that. But anyway, I see a connection there between the sexual revolution that's happening, the sex worker revolution that's happening. You know, they definitely are intertwined in many ways. But
now, I heard you use the term decriminalization. What's the difference between that and legalization?
Well, legalization is another form of criminalization. You have regulations in place that the arrests do not stop. And if we look at the Nevada model of legalization, you know, it costs $1 million or something like that to get a brothel license.
Oh.
The brothel owner is the one with all the power and the clients as well.
Mm-hmm.
The workers themselves, their power gets lost in all of that. They also have to hand over at least half of their earnings, but it's usually more than half because they're paying the brothel owner half. You know, and I don't know if it's changed, but at one time you had to live at the brothel and also pay rent to the brothel.
Oh, wow.
So that's how they get more than half of the cut.
That's
crazy. But there's no, you know, they don't have any bargaining power as laborers. And so
and it's like they have nowhere else to go either, because it's like you can't just, you know, go to another state and right, do that work. Right. You just can't do it. You're stuck there.
And Nevada is also, for instance, one of the top three states for prostitution arrests. So there are more people. It's the three top states for prostitution arrests are Nevada, California, and Texas. So, you know, in the one place where you can work legally, and it's not the whole state, it's only in certain counties that are outside of Las Vegas, we call it the whore habitat. They are kept out of, you know, they're not near society, you know, where they
it's like a zoo.
You know, but, you know, they don't have power. Decriminalization. Now, you're going to have sex workers, when they're decriminalized, they better be ready to fight for their rights, because even under decrim, of course, regulations can happen. And but it's a, you know, different system than the legalization. There will not be arrests under decriminalization. And that is the primary reason to decriminalize. People who are engaging in consensual erotic services, buyers or purchasers or providers, should not be arrested. You know, these adults could go and have sex without any concern if there wasn't money involved. The fact that money is involved somehow makes it something different, which is ridiculous.
It really is.
And, you know, I'm okay with, you know, certain regulations, but sex workers better be at the helm of those regulations. We need to be in complete control of our own labor and working conditions. You know, we don't need to be treated like children, you know, people who aren't going to follow the laws or regulations anyway. I mean, you're punishing people who, like, myself and so many other providers I know, I mean, we go above and beyond in terms of safety and doing things that we need to do to protect ourselves and clients. And, you know, we're going to do it. We don't need the state to tell us to do it, you know.
Right.
But anyway, it's just something that's going to happen. It's inevitable that regulations are going to come into play. But as my peer and fellow activist Maxine Dugan says, reparations before regulations. You know, the society, we need to have a truth and reconciliation commission where workers can stand up before the public and talk about all the horrors that have been met upon our community with their consent all this time by supporting criminalization. You know, whether ignorant of it or not, there have been all of these horrible things that have been perpetrated on sex workers, and the stigma, so much. I mean, police having sex with us to arrest us. This is very common. It's something that happens a lot more than people want to admit.
Still, I don't understand how it's not entrapment. Like, I don't, like, it seems like they can get away with it in that case. Like, I don't get it.
Well, if someone does a Google of it, you know, it was just very recently that even in Hawaii, the detectives and law enforcement there and were fighting for their right to do this. You know, they...
That just seems wrong on so many levels.
Absolutely. I mean, it is horrible. And, you know, but when you look at individual
cases...
Nobody
wants to stand up for it, though. You know, nobody wants to be the person that stood up for... Right.
And I think, and the problem that we have is just in our society, if you stand up for sex, you're all of a sudden on the wrong side of morality. It's something I feel very passionate about, that we really need to change the way we're thinking about sex.
Well, it's going to take, some people are just going to have to die.
Pass out.
Go away, you know, because they are just never going to change. Those people are never going to change.
One of the biggest impetuses for change, though, is that, you know, people that hold a certain belief, they just no longer exist. And
they come from that generation that believes that women should wear, you know, button down to their wrists shirts and up to their neck, and or, you know, that. And then there's a lot of even younger people today, we call them SWERFs, you know,
SWERFs?
And they, if SFWERF, sex work exclusionary radical feminists. There they are trying to limit what women can do with their own bodies and lives, claiming that they're feminists, and they are in bed with all these radical right Christians and people who are very anti-LGBT, anti-transgender, you know, anti-sex work, and but, you know, and unfortunately, because those people tend to make a lot of noise, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the whatever.
Yeah, vocal minority.
And they have money. You know, that's another thing. There's a lot of funding behind these people. You know, these the anti-abortion, anti-choice, anti-sex work, you know, they're pretty much the same. You know, anti-LGBT, and they're all the same.
They're all the same. They just have, like, almost the same backer that's kind of putting it all into
and
all these.
They're very well networked and organized, and you know, they know what they're doing in terms of fighting and all that, fighting freedom. But they are going away. They're going away.
They're fighting to keep the status quo for a long time. But, yeah, they are losing that battle.
Yes.
So is there anything that, like, a standard listener to this podcast or someone could do to help this in general?
Well, definitely. I mean, what I did as an activist is I sought out, you know, I saw that there were numerous organizations, and I went from one to another, and then I finally realized, wow, I want to find who's actually working on changing the law. Mm-hmm. Because that's where,
not,
you know,
just saying that they are actually
right, actually doing it. And that's how I got involved with the Erotic Service Provider Legal Education and Research Project, ESPLRP, which is, took me a while to figure out how to say that. But
we'll put a link in the show notes for that.
But, you know, we're talking a group of people who are current workers themselves, which I think is really important because current workers need to be front and center of this activism. And these are people who have been in the actual trenches, you know, doing work, you know, legal work to pass legislation, to bring forth cases, to fight, you know, criminalization. It's the first sex worker-led organization that brought forth a federal case challenging the prostitution penal code. Unfortunately, it was dismissed in the Ninth Circuit. We were going to take it to the Supreme Court, but when Justice Kennedy stepped down recently, going to retire, then we decided, well, since Justice Kennedy was the primary judge in Lawrence versus Texas, which, you know, decriminalized gay sex, and our arguments greatly, you know, relied on Lawrence versus Texas, and if, you know, someone is chosen for that position, and they're pretty much a very anti-civil rights Supreme Court, you know, right now, we didn't want to chance there being a legal precedent of shutting us down at the Supreme Court level. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to do that. But supporting ESPLRP would be a great way to start because, you know, we're not funded. We're not. It's very hard to get funding for organizations that are sex worker led because of stigma and, you know, other reasons. But that would be a good thing. But also, you know, just listening to people who are in erotic service provision, there are a lot of stigmatized, marginalized, old viewpoints about, you know, erotic service provision that, you know, open minds, people could have a more open mind. You know, something I've noticed, you know, after when FetLife, you know, after SESTA FOSTA was passed, you know, FetLife, like all of the online platforms that had anything to do with sex, sexuality, or where sex workers might congregate, you know, you had the pro-doms there as well. And pro-doms are erotic service providers. You know, they were discussing sanitizing the doms off of the platform. As well as, you know, other sex workers, but they didn't, which I was, you know, pretty happy about that because come on, we got to start fighting back instead of just letting them, you know, get their way all the time thinking that it's going to protect us because it's not. And some of the posts that I posted on FetLife 8 years ago, I predicted all of this because I knew, you know, watching the opposition, you know, to sex workers, I knew what their rhetoric was. I knew what they were going to do. I knew what, you know, they didn't make it. They weren't hiding it. And I knew that this was going to eventually impact the BDSM community as well. And because, you know, we're all in this boat together pretty much. We're alternative, like, you know, I don't like using that either, but we are to yeah. alternative to the standard norms
yeah.
that society has clung to, you know, all this time. We're challenging those norms, and thank goodness.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, for them to take, you know, pass this law, SESTA and FOSTA, you know, it really did, you know, it caused all these yeah. online platforms to just start shutting down, or, you know, even people that sold sex toys were being affected. Yep. And they're in a legal business. So, you know,
yeah,
it's...
They shut down furry dating sites of all things.
Right.
Like, why?
Yeah, why?
So it's far reaching, and I knew that mm-hmm. was going to happen, because yeah. it's really an attack on sexual freedom. Ultimately, that's exactly what it is. But anyway, you know, not having the guts to stand up with people who are, just because they're selling an erotic service, you know, how are they really any different from someone else who is like a furry or mm-hmm. polyamorous people who are fighting for their right to be able to do, mm-hmm. have their rights recognized? Because ultimately, that's where it gets broken down. Is, you know, that the government, we need a legal precedent. And that's what our case was actually trying to do, was mm-hmm. that it wasn't about prostitution. It was about liberty. It was about what adults do, whether money is involved or not, that the government does not have the power to just step in there and do anything, that there are certain spheres in our lives that should be off limits. When we're having sex with whoever we want, whether it's same gender, whether it's five people, whether mm-hmm. it's with money involved or not, that is no one's business but the people that are involved.
Absolutely.
Provided, and in our case, it might be of interest to your listeners. And I was very happy that to get this, at least, you know, we lost, you know, our case was dismissed, but we got the state of California to say in two places in their opposition filing that sex is not a human right. So whoa. This is the whoa. Bottom line yeah. of this argument that these people make against sex work, against a lot of things.
That just gave me goosebumps, because I'm like, sex is definitely
yes,
a human and right.
It's like cracks forming in the wall if they're going to be like the footholds for us.
And they made
on.
It clear
wow.
that even within a relationship that is acknowledged as a constitutionally protected relationship, which is marriage. So basically what a lot of people don't understand is any sexual connection outside of a marriage has zero constitutional protections.
That is scary.
So
that's terrifying, actually.
And they also said that even when it's 100% consensual.
Yeah.
So
now they're taking the word out of consensual and just getting rid of it.
Well, it does. Apparently, it doesn't matter. You are not constitutionally protected. See, people assume they have a lot of freedoms that they really don't have. And you find out you don't have them when a case erupts. Like yeah. if you're a BDSM practitioner and your ex tries to take your kids because you're a BDSM practitioner.
That's when you find out. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you know, but so the laws that, you know, the legal precedent that we want as erotic service providers really is the same legal precedent that we all want to have our sexual freedom acknowledged mm-hmm. and for the government to step off our dicks, whether they're flesh or silicone.
Yeah.
I like that. Step off our dicks. Mm-hmm.
And our pussies and whatever else we yeah. have that we're playing with. It's really, they need to get away.
Yeah.
It's time to grow up and to stop, you know, piddling around with what people are doing in their private space. This is the most sacred space of a human being, is what they decide to do mm. with their body and their lives. Mm. And it's a liberty interest. These are all liberty interests. It's your liberty interest to have sex. It's your liberty interest to get money for sex if that's what you want to do. It's your liberty interest to purchase sex if you want to. It's your liberty interest to get married to more than one person if you want to. Your liberty interest if you want to be polyamorous. Those are all liberty interests.
Exactly.
And for people to violate those liberty interests, it's not okay. here in Colorado, what many people don't know, and this would be true depending on how the laws are written in many other states. Mm-hmm. If you trade something of, you know, we have all the time humans are actually engaging in sexual trade, emotional, physical labor. Yeah. Trade
just not
for
the money
or even, you know, any, but see, that's where it's written very vaguely. Yeah. If anything of value is traded, it doesn't have to be, it could be a ride somewhere. It could be a drink at a club with the expectation of sex. I had a legal, professor actually made this clear to me that most people in Colorado are guilty of prostitution technically because of how the laws are written.
I never would have thought that.
And it's very vague. But, you know, I remember when I was 21 and I was a massage therapist back then and my car broke down and my mom and my grandmother said to me, "Aren't you having sex with your boyfriend? He should fix your car." And I looked at them and said, well, what am I, a prostitute? I mean, that's prostitution, but they reflect a very common attitude in our society that if you're having sex with someone, you know, and you're a woman, then this other person should, they're required or obligated to do something for you. And how, you know, many generations were women withholding sex from their husbands to get things they wanted around the house, a dishwasher or whatever they wanted. Yeah. I mean, come on, so let's
the, the currency is already there.
Yeah, it really is.
And but we attach, when it comes to prostitution, you know, people attach, they project a lot of stigma on that. And I think, too, that, you know, it's normal for people to envision themselves and then they factor in whatever they've seen in movies or television shows. And Hollywood has been very traditionally very stigmatizing of prostitution.
Yep.
Everybody is in a certain circumstance. And I don't even want to get into those stereotypes, but, you know, the stereotypes. And then you imagine yourself and then, oh, my God, the repulsion.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we need to, you know, people, I wish they would stop doing that.
Reality.
You know, it's just, and even if it is. You know, there are people in situations where they trade sex, you know, for food and whatever they need. But, you know, who am I to judge anyone for what they do to try to survive through the day? As long as they're not robbing someone, as long as they're not causing harm to someone, then why even have an opinion, you know, that's disparaging? But we would hope that those people would have access to their human rights, right?
Yeah,
well, it's still even in the society of, okay, as a female, you're supposed to use your assets to further your career. Yet at the same time, you have, you know, well, I flirted with my boss and now my boss wants me, but he's a bad person. But you're using your assets to get what
I've
you want.
Seen some bad. It's confusing these days. I mean, it's just, and I don't know. It's humans. We're messed up. We need help.
Yeah.
I hope that we figure it out. You know, the best we can do is try to, I think from where we stand, be the best we can be as people and be honest, be genuine, have some integrity. Gosh. And, and, you know, do what you can to improve your situation without harming others and to spread that to others, you know. And if we were all doing that, you know, maybe it'd be
it all comes down
world.
To the golden rule. Treat other people how you'd like to be treated.
So if I want to beat you, does that mean I want to be beat?
Probably.
Sorry.
Well, maybe we'll have another opportunity just to talk about BDSM stuff.
Yeah.
I know. We do have a few listener questions.
Okay, cool, cool.
We're doing pretty good.
We can.
So this first question comes from Doodle Bentham. Is that how you pronounce it?
Bentham. Doodle Bentham, I believe. Sorry if we got your name wrong.
Sorry.
They asked a few questions, too, I think. So
what emotion does the domination of others make you feel the most?
Well, domination itself involves so much, and it could be so different for each person that I'm engaging. But my goal and it's very satisfying, is to, you know, I need to figure out where is that person trying to go and what, you know, that determines what I'm going to do. And seeing them, if, you know, get into that zone, into that headspace where they're trying to go, that makes me feel very happy. And I want them to experience a therapeutic release in the situation. So if I achieve that, and that's something I am definitely trying to achieve, I'm going to feel really happy about that. And, you know, it makes me feel very satisfied to do that. And it's from a, you know, it's not an ego thing, but, you know, we're experiencing it together. I have this saying, I say, I don't want to do things at you. I want to do things with you. And, you know, so there's an exchange of energy, exchange of power there. And, the way I approach domination, it's much more of an equal footing. I mean, I might be, well, I am the dominant, but that doesn't mean I'm above them and sure. There's this dynamic of I'm minimizing them. I mean, it's really none of that. It's how much can I get this person's body in a state of next level pleasure and transformative experience that gets them to the next level of their understanding of who they are and what they want to get out of this whole experience and this journey with BDSM, with their sexuality, with who they are as an individual human being. Mm-hmm. So how could I not be so totally stoked by that if I see that I'm getting somewhere with that?
We actually saw that when we were doing the bubble thing and when you were playing other times at that night that we were here. You get giddy. From our perspective, you get happy and it's infectious. It's really great.
I get really excited. You know, I'm like, yes. I mean, I'm really there, you know, with them.
You're participating in it 100%.
You know, you're being present.
And feeling, you know, I want to, you know, really be a part of their experience. And it's not that I'm just there to, you know, act out certain things, you know, in a mechanical way. I'm humbled by it because I think that as humans, you know, when we are allowed that very personal access to another person's body, space, self, that's a really big deal. So yeah, it makes me feel good to be trusted like that as well. You know, so it's very fulfilling.
Humbling sometimes.
Yeah, it's very humbling.
Yes, it's very fulfilling in many different ways, psychologically, emotionally, and even physically. We won't get into that, though.
Let's see.
Do you want to do...
This is from our number one fan, Akron Timeless.
I probably said it wrong again.
Probably. Are you fairly active with BDSM in your off time, or does it feel too much like work that you want to take a break from?
Well, I don't have personal subs that I have very, like, it's kind of a bummer. Like, when I retire from doing sessions, I don't know when that'll ever be, but then I will probably have more involved relationships with submissives, but I just don't have time or energy. I have to have between activism.
This takes a lot of energy
and sessions, and it does have, you know, it's a tremendous amount of energy that I give to sessions. So between the sessions and activism and my family and life, I don't have time for personal BDSM relationships, but I would otherwise. But I love BDSM sex. I am a kinkster. I'm a fetishist. I love to be tied up. And, you know, in fact, actually, when it comes to, you know, I love having a partner that can wrestle me down and force restraints on me and tie me up and fuck me.
I completely understand that.
I am a top... I need to be not in top space sometimes. Mm. Oh my God, I need it so bad. And if you can force me to have orgasms over and over and over and over, it's a win-win.
Yes.
I completely understand that.
And plus, I need to experience the stuff that I do to other people. Mm-hmm. And I do that purposely so that I have more of a better understanding of what I'm doing to others, so I can really get them in that great Absolutely. Place where they're trying to go. Because mm-hmm. if you don't know what it's like, you don't have that dimension, Absolutely. that all of that, you know, is huge. It's just huge. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, yeah.
I can understand that completely because recently, you know, I just heard the term, actually, a friend of ours from Thunder in the Mountains, we had this whole discussion about the difference between using the term switch versus sensualist.
Sensualist? I've never heard that yet.
Our friend was telling us about this, so thank you very much. She considers herself a sensualist.
And with talking to her about this, I'm like, I'm not a switch, I'm a sensualist, because I go with the flow.
Yeah.
Days I'm a top, sometimes I'm a bottom,
Yeah, so that's kind of like her theory. Instead of like trying to, and sorry if I'm misrepresenting your theory a little bit, but instead of like, you know, we kind of feel like you have to force yourself to either be like you're dumb, you're bum, or a switch. But really, like certain people, perhaps all they're looking for is just like some sort of sensual buzz, right?
So, yeah, and depending on what time of day, what mentality you're at, sometimes you want to be a dog.
I dig that. And I think, you know, I've been saying this for years that, you know, there are no rules here except consent and the safety protocol and honoring each other, you know. But as far as, I think that it's been way too dogmatic. Mm-hmm. I think that, I remember going to the sanctuary back in 2009, and I was being mentored by this awesome top who's like a master with floggers, and I would purposely do submissive things just to make everybody freak out because, you know, and that's where, you know, you're creating rules, you know, that are really very limiting. I don't want anything to limit my experience and my evolution as a human being. And of course, I'm a very dominant alpha woman, with or without BDSM, you know, it just is what it is. And, you know, it's my natural, you know, where I feel most comfortable. But at the same time, I don't want to be limited by that. Mm-hmm. And I want to, like recently I bottomed with another friend of mine who's a dom, and she was just so tickled seeing me that way. She just couldn't believe it. And I'm just like, God. But you know, we need that, you know, I think as humans, there are times when we need to be in control, and there's times when we need to surrender and not be in control. And it's much healthier. Like when I mentor couples, I warn them about the dogma in the BDSM community. Mm-hmm. I say, please, you know, do what you feel best is for you. Let your heart and your spirit guide you. Don't let anyone tell you this is the way or that's the way.
We let that very thing hold us up when we first were getting involved in kink. We almost didn't like it at all because people were like, you know, if you're this, you're doing this. Yeah. If you're that, you're that. And me more so than even Lily, I was just like, well, I don't think I fit into any of these categories at all. I didn't know what I was supposed to do during play parties. Excellent. And like this whole thing. Yeah. So.
Because you didn't. And why should you? You should make your own zone. And,
absolutely.
And I think that's what the more recent generations that are coming into BDSM are bringing. And I'm just so glad because, you know, those rules, you know, screw that. It's just not even, you know.
And like, those were signs of a different time.
Yeah, have fun and enjoy, explore, learn.
Do you want to read the next one, honey?
Doodle Bentham asks, ask her if play parties and one-on-one scene work out in her head on different spaces. Also ask her about dom space. So I guess it's mostly a question about dom space and head space while you're playing.
I get really high from playing. I know that after a scene, if I am high, then I know my bottom is too.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's an exchange of energy. It really is. That's where you're doing something together. And, you know, that feeling is something that, I mean, I'm definitely, my goal is to get them, my bottom or bottoms. Recently, I facilitated for a couple at the same time on two different tables. That was intense and exhausting.
Yes.
But I was so excited to have that opportunity to do that. But, you know, I try not to, like, in these situations, you know, we want to go with the flow, you know, as best as we can, I think, and not have, you know, certain expectations. You know, things are going to, I hope I'm articulating this good. You know, that's part of this process, is that there is no right way or wrong way, even in the moment, as long as you've got the consent and the safety and all that in place, you know, to just have fun with it and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that the tops should be learning constantly too. And, yes. and we're all learning. We're learning, right? And with each, you know, new person that we're connecting with, it's a learning process, and there's just so much there to gain out of it and experience and just to have fun with it. But, you know, to me, that's my dom space is, you know, I am, you know, a successful zone where, yes, we got in there and we had some altered state going on. Mm-hmm. And we experienced something good and positive. And, I mean, it could be just so many different scenarios, though.
What up, what we got next here?
So this one's going to be from Knox. Are there things that are not a personal fetish or interesting stimulation that are just part of the job?
I personally don't think of it as a job. More of an adventure. I mean, there are days when I feel less like, you know, we all have days where we don't feel like giving energy, you know, mm-hmm. and this requires a lot of energy. But I always seem to manage to pull that energy out, and then afterwards I'll be energized. But mm-hmm. I want to do the best I can for people in this context. I feel very lucky that I do this, what I do as a dom. And I was made for this, you could say. And this is a very creative process. And I'm an artist, just period. I paint, mm-hmm. you know, all sorts of artistic stuff. And this is another art form for me. And it's very, very versatile. And, I mean, as you can see, I have a huge amount of artist tools.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most prolific collections in the United States, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. And it's just up to me to be creative. I'm mm-hmm. going to make every one of those sessions is going to be different. And it also has to do with the personalities and the energy of the person as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to make it interesting for me. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to settle for being bored. I'm just not a person that's ever bored. I'm really not. You know, I get excited about it. If something does become laborious and it, I'll find something else that I can.
You'll find a way to make it fun.
Right. Yeah. Always. And I guess I'm lucky like that because I've seen other people struggle.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's okay. Maybe they're not meant to be there and they're forcing it, but yeah. I'm not.
So Doodle Bentham asks, do you have any hobbies outside of the BDSM world? You know, like every other human being out there?
I like to watch some videos about Sasquatch.
About what, Sasquatch?
Squatching. I'm a squatcher. I like going out in the woods. And
I was thinking squanching from like,
the cartoon.
Yeah. So you hunt down Bigfoot.
I like to, you know, I just think that whole realm is very fascinating. So
cryptozoology.
Yes, UFOs and all that stuff. I also, for many years now, I've been a student of various schools of thought, like around, I guess you could say different religions, you mm-hmm. know. Egyptian science, you know, is something that I've studied for many, many years, and Buddhism, you know, all sorts of different schools of thought. You know, I love mm-hmm. that whole thing. I study algorithms, different trends in narratives, social narratives, politics. Oh, sure. I'm fascinated by the media and propaganda. That's yeah. something else mm-hmm. I watch very closely, and how people respond or react to certain popular narratives. Lots of different things. I like studying a lot. I like studying different things. I'm
You always like to learn. That's something I'm learning during this is you never stop learning.
You just don't. I mean, that's why I can't ever be bored. I mean, there's not even enough time to do everything and to follow everything that you want to study or learn
or do. The concept of bored is like you have time, but you don't know what to do. And that's a foreign concept to me. I'm like, if I have time, there's so much stuff that I can figure out to do.
Maybe it's that people don't know where to start.
I like to make cookies, too.
Okay, you sold me there.
I'm a cookie baker. I love baking. I like baking pies.
So this last question comes from Doodle Bentham as well. He asks, what mistake or myth do most people hold about pro-doms that simply isn't true?
Well, I don't know if the one that I've dealt with is, it's true, though. Depending on the dom. And I call it corn cob up the ass syndrome.
But it's not universally true.
What?
But
I think I've missed this one.
You know, you just, some of these people, doms, whatever, who, you know, they have that attitude that, I mean, they believe in their own myth and they create myths. And, you know, they just, you know, there's this dom or I'm the headmistress or I'm the dom or and it's just they take themselves way too seriously.
They bind
and
they, to the narrative a little too
they
much.
Tend to be oppressive of other people and even cross lines of consent and I think that I've had to live that down a lot where people assume that I'm going to be like that too. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, they realize, you know, oh, you're actually pretty nice and you're polite. And, oh, you know, you don't, I mean, and I challenge a lot of those. I think people mimic in the community, you know, I mean, it's just normal for humans to copy and you see a lot of this behavior and people will copy that and, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, the scene is going to, you know, as things change and transform and people realize, oh, yeah, you don't got to do that.
And I think that'll naturally happen because people will find their own paths eventually.
I think so.
But we're not all bitches. You know, I can be a bitch. Oh, yeah.
You can be a dominant personality and not be, you know. I'm not going to use the B word, but, you know, you can actually be nice because, you know, there's doms that are there to, you know, maybe they're even more happy, kind of happy-go-lucky things. They're just helping you to explore a particular thing, right? So we have a segment on the podcast. It's called Define This. And what we do is we look up, speaking of offensive, we have our listeners pick words off of like Urban Dictionary for us, stuff that's sexually related, not too offensive. And we get it, and then we try to guess what we think it is, and then we look up what it actually is.
Oh, God.
Today's phrase is brought to us by Erie. Thank you very much. She's also the same Erie from Xenocat Artifacts, which are really cool. You should check them out on Etsy. They have really amazing silicone toys. And the phrase is Greek ramrod.
Greek ramrod. No.
So... I have something that comes to mind, and this is probably not it. It's okay if it's not close. You know, we don't really keep track of score. So what I think...
Keep score.
No, don't keep score. So I think a Greek ramrod, and this is ill-advised, but a Greek ramrod is when you have sex with someone, but you've covered your phallus in Greek yogurt.
Ooh,
interesting.
Because I definitely think it has something to do with anal.
Okay. Oh, great. Yes, that would make sense.
And but ramrod, like without it being cleaned out, like kind of what you said, you know, without being. Is that what you meant by yogurt?
I meant just like Greek yogurt, like actual Greek yogurt.
Oh, okay.
But you're talking about like man yogurt.
Yeah, poopy or
poopy. Oh, that too. That works, too.
Oh, gosh.
What do you think, honey?
So I'm going to go a little bit obscure.
All right.
I think Greek ramrod is a sex machine, but instead of a silicone dildo, they're using the white alabaster you find in Greece.
Or how about a machine, maybe, even?
Yeah.
A machine, like I've got two right there.
Oh, yeah, there are two fucking machines right here.
Yeah.
Ram, ram. I'm getting distracted again.
Well, I'm so, dying to know.
Say Team Ramrod. Say Team Ramrod.
All right, so let's see. Greek Ramrod in Urban Dictionary.
All right, you got to share it, or do you want me to share it? All right, so here is Urban Dictionary definition of Greek Ramrod. Break off the towel rack. Shove it up your ass.
Oh, no.
Shit all over it. Oh. Throw your jizz in the air. Swing the rod like a baseball bat and say, yeah, as your jizz and shit splatters on the wall. Well, I'd say you were the closest. You were definitely the closest. That is a complicated way to get off.
Okay, so basically, you shove it up, you shit on it, and then you jerk off on it?
It just seems like a messy sprinkler to me. That's what I would call that. But it says, you guys need to go into... So this is used in a sentence. You guys need to go in the bathroom and check out the Greek ramrod I left all over the wall.
Okay.
maybe this was generated in a way to explain a really messy bathroom, one that had like all the stuff all over, and somebody's like, "What the hell happened there?" Well, let me tell you, somebody did Greek ramrod.
Well, thank you so much, Damina L, for sitting and talking to us, and I've been enjoying looking at all the stuff while trying to pay attention to this interview. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners? And then, how are we gonna, how would someone get a hold of you? How would someone get a hold of Mile High Dungeon?
Well, milehighdungeon.com is the website for the dungeon, where you can look at the profiles of the different mistresses who use the space, myself and Mistress Victoria Marks included. And then specifically for me, there is denverdominatrix.com and dominal.com. And also, Doms for Decrim, which is DOMMES, the number 4, Decrim, DECRIM.com, which I need to update. It's actually, I've left it the way it is. I created that website in 2015. So you can go and look at it and see that I've been saying this stuff since 2015.
It's a time capsule.
And I left it that way on purpose for that reason, but I'm going to upgrade it soon. But Doms for Decrim. And at that site, you can, there's links to the other organizations like ESPLERP, which is ESPLERP.org. Then there's the Sex Worker Nation YouTube channel, where we feature videos and the Dominate the Nation podcast. And people can check out what we're doing in terms of activism related to erotic service providers' rights and unionization for erotic service providers. But yeah, and then the @ Domina_L is my Twitter. So anyway, yeah. But if you just Domina L Google, you'll find all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for being on the show. Definitely check her out, support her. The sexuality you save could be your own.
You guys are awesome. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Damina L, for inviting us into your dungeon and talking with us. Anytime I manage to go into a dungeon and not get spanked or beat is actually pretty unusual.
Wait, I didn't hit you with a sex toy, you're right. Holy shit.
No, all you did is drop my mic.
And dropped water everywhere.
Oh, that's right, you did.
But thank you so much, Damina Ali. You are lovely, and I love talking to you. And
yeah, I actually learned quite a bit on that one. And it reiterates how important what we're all doing. Mm-hmm. If you're a model, if you're a sex worker, all the stuff, like, you are very important. You are valid. The work you are doing is valid. And we all need to support each other. That's how this works. This is how we move things forward.
So very true.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Trisexuals podcast. Remember to rate us on iTunes, tell your friends about the podcast, join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram. Be sure to reach out to us if you're a model and would like to do a pinup shout out for the show. Remember to sign up for our giveaway. You have until September 21st. Links and other information are available in the show notes.
I'm Lily Chameleon, the lickable lover.
And I'm Max Chameleon, the manic mercenary. All right, we love you guys.
Love
thanks,
you.
Thanks for coming to our thing and sign up for the giveaway. We love you. There's going to be lots more giveaways coming up.